Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the Fukushima irradiated. Of course, we have no idea how Fukushima irradiated is, because they stopped testing the seawater for radiation like halfway through last year, when it started to get really bad, of course. I love the way this country covers itself up. You know, look, ladies and gentlemen, we're the least corrupt country in the world. Allegedly. So you know, if you've got problems and you can't get yourself a Cayman Island bank account or Swiss bank account or something like that, you need a corrupt place to help shield you from the International Monetary Fund and all of that kind of stuff, come on down to New Zealand. We are the Cayman Islands of the South Pacific, and there's only three islands. Well, there's also a whole bunch of other little minor ones, but they suck. You know, trust me, I used to live on one of them. My very special guest is, commonly known in the Monty Python-esque thing, Bryony. Bryony Holmes, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinny.
Now, you have a very good confidant here in New Zealand named Franz Stradner, who donated a good portion to the Vinnie Eastwood Show earlier this year, and he asked if I'd put your book on the website for a couple of months, and I said, yeah, well, why not? You know, doesn't make too much of a difference to me, and it would actually help somebody get some of their work out there. All too happy to do it. And today, we're going to be talking to you for up to 2 hours about your book.
So excellent. Could you please, thank you very much for having me.
So go right ahead and tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
At the moment, researching everything possible. I'm addicted to finding out the truth and trying to deduce as much as I can to a point of recurring information and theories and ideas. Through that, I found myself writing a book called The Range of Illusion, which is the one that is on your website. It's a part of a series that I'm working on. I'm writing the sequel as we speak. But yeah, it's my first book in the series. It is a dystopian parallel universe called Gaia, which mirrors a lot of the issues that we face in today's society. I wrote it with the guise that I was learning a lot of information and I really wanted to share it with people, but in a palatable sense, because I'd rooted through all this information and wanted people to have access to it, but in a way that was delivered in an action adventure, which was kind of fun and had some humor going on too, which I found was very important. And somebody has commented in the past, which was actually Fran, bless him, that it resides a lot with George Orwell's 1984 and the Celestine Prophecy, James Redfield's book, which is a huge compliment because I've got great respect for both those novels. But it combines a bit of conspiracy and possibly what could happen in the future with self-development and growing as a human within a bit of evolution as the self. Yeah, that's what I have so far.
Well, could you describe what evolution of the self is?
Evolution of the self. I think we're all faced with trials and tribulations, especially given the media and the expectations of who we're supposed to be in society. A lot of us struggle with trying to understand our true selves with those expectations. Say, for example, the 9-to-5 Monday to Friday job to pay for bills which are exorbitant, or one of those expectations, and not being given the time, especially after the 2008 crash, to actually be able to spend time with yourself and your family and develop as a human being. You could use the word spiritual. You could. There's all sorts of different ways that different people from different backgrounds would view it. For me, I would say it was a spiritual experience, not necessarily a God as such, but I find finding yourself is it's a special opportunity that few people are able to have access to.
Well, can we talk about this in a broader sense? Because I feel that personal evolution often, when it's at its best, is a very holistic, overarching evolution, like everything changes, preferably for the better. And I'm not 100% sure in the modern context, looking at how humanity is working, that I really believe in that evolution anymore. I believe in devolution, though, because I see marked evidence of it.
Mm-hmm. I think there's elements where people can take a form of positivity in educating themselves, being able to be in a position where they can have the tools to react appropriately and have an understanding. I mean, we all go through growth periods as humans, which are quite painful, transitional periods. I mean, when I was writing this book, I certainly went through some moments of panic because I didn't really see the brightness at the end of the tunnel. But there are ways to discover aspects such as that. I mean, there's that great documentary Thrive out there, which does deal with a lot of this heavy, heavy information and gives that light that's necessary at the end of the tunnel, especially dealing with this kind of information. And there's so much out there, and a lot of it is quite negative. I think meditation is a good thing. I think that intrinsically valuing yourself as a human being within this society, as opposed to being just another number in the system, is a really important factor too, which goes back to what I was saying before of that Monday to Friday, 9-till-5, or which is realistically probably 9-till-midnight nowadays. 70-hour work weeks, which doesn't allow for the time for people to do that. I mean, reading a beautiful book or listening to a beautiful piece of music can really transform your perception in the moment. And that's what I try to do, I think.
Mm. Well, I was just thinking about Thrive. Funny you should mention that just earlier before coming on the show about the Taurus and how everything's a feedback system. Is that part of what evolving, let's say, I don't know, your intelligence, just for an example, is really about? Is about being able to hold all of those simultaneous views so that they feed back into each other and replenish and constantly question themselves. I was thinking that's basically what wisdom is, isn't it? Holding two conflicting points of view simultaneously.
And being able to find a balance within it. Yeah, definitely. I love that you mentioned the Taurus in that. It's a spectacular way of viewing it as a whole and as a big picture. I mean, you have to have balance in the world. You can't have all positivity. You've got to balance it out with something else. Unfortunately, it seems to be the way the cookie crumbles. It's just we're a little bit heavy on the negative aspects of society at the moment, and not enough people are aware of what is going on out there. Their ignorance is bliss for a lot of people. So I think that's the biggest struggle, is trying to discuss it with people and trying to find somebody to share these ideas with. I mean, that was partially why I wrote The Range of Illusion, because I had all this information in my head and I had friends to share it with, but it had to come out in an artistic form and it had to come out with some positivity, and hence the sort of Celestine prophecy tilt of the self-development of the self, and being able to manifest positivity within negative situations. The Taurus, I would agree with 100%. I love that you brought that up.
Well, and it, at the same time that I was thinking that, I was also thinking, you know, you can change situations in front of you, but the simultaneous contradictory viewpoint is one from Ayn Rand, is that you can ignore reality, but you cannot ignore the consequences of ignoring reality.
Yeah, I agree with that. I haven't actually heard that one before.
Well, she was like way back in the 50s or something like that. And it occurs to me that if you're going to be talking about fiction, another thing that comes to mind is that quote from Viva Vendetta. Is that, what was it? My father said that artists use lies to tell the truth while politicians use lies to cover it up.
Interesting way of doing it. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, my book, granted, I did replace certain names with alternative titles. So it's I would say there is a distruth in that, just because of at the time of writing it, there was a concern about the different organizations that I was writing about. So for those who are in the know, they'll pick up on it, and it could be almost a satire in a sense. For those not so much, hopefully it'll trigger some interest and they'll ask me about it, because I am readily available via my email. I make a point of that in case people are interested as to where the concepts came from.
Oh, perhaps you want to have a supplementary thing to go out with the book, you know, like a special edition, etc., that has backgrounder or information based upon the things of it, you know, how they the Aliens films, they did a special making of, like a remake of their making of, to have a look at the entire series in retrospect and what everything truly meant at the time
with the symbolism and everything. Yeah, it's something I have been considering. I am developing a blog very gently at the moment, because it is a sort of, I'm not technologically savvy. I'm trying to be. I'm learning. But there will be ideas that are put into that. There's a heavy focus on certain aspects, such as the trigger to what brought me to writing about the novel, huge issue with the decline in the bees. That really worried me for a while, and I started looking into it and learned about the collapse disorder, and then went beyond that and started following the money and understanding that it was a much bigger picture than what I initially understood it to be, with all the ideas that were flowing quite consistently amongst different parties.
Collapse disorder, that's not a nomenclature for narcolepsy, is it?
I don't think they're sleeping. No, it's... All the bees were abandoning their homes midway through the seasons, and there were very few left over, and the ones that were left over were quite ill, so perhaps sleepy in a sense. But it seemed abnormal. It was unnatural. It was definitely an issue, and tracing through all the different information that I came across, and the most consistent theory that was out there is that it was due to the systemic pesticides and the genetically modified organisms that are readily available on our shelves. And then diving into that a bit further, started to realize that it was much larger than just the bees. You know, it was certainly affecting us as humans and our diets, and a grander scheme of depopulation agenda is something that's thrown out there with great consistency as well.
And 25,000 plus species going extinct every year or every day or something ridiculous like that.
Exactly. A massive concern, not looking after our communities, and that including our agricultural communities. We're so heavily reliant upon it. We're not going to do well without them, that's for sure.
Well, it reminds me of what happened when, during the first Great Depression. I think at the time 90% of people were living in rural areas growing their own food. 10% of people lived in cities and didn't grow their own food. I think like 10 million people starved to death in the United States at the time. And that was when the population was like, 100 million or something, maybe less.
Wow.
And now it's like 400 million with 90% of people living in cities, not growing their own food. What's going to happen if a depression hits?
Exactly. That's exactly it. People, and the trust in what is readily available to people and where it comes from, is a massive concern as well. I mean, people don't understand what they're consuming. I find I'm in North America at the moment, and I find it very difficult to consume food here, because a lot of it is imported from places that are repetitively targeted with the genetically modified food that's out there, the USA being one of them. I mean, I can't state any of this for fact, but there's certainly theories that are consistent. And that's where it all comes from. And they're fruits and vegetables that are out of season, and you know they're out of season, and they have no flavor, and you consume it and you feel a little bit ill later. And who feels sick after a salad, you know? Like, doesn't make any sense.
It's like, well, I think I abandoned the belief that it was all happening by accident nearly 5 years ago, namely because it couldn't happen by accident. There's so many different fail-safes and different possibilities, thought processes, vetting processes and things of that nature involved in food preparation, farming practices, distribution, etc., that for the entire food supply to be accidentally contaminated with things mm-hmm. that reduce your fertility and increase cancer, that have no processable vitamins or minerals or nutritions into it, see a massive obesity epidemic growing, for which you give a pharmaceutical drugs, which you make a hell of a lot of money on, which also causes exactly. obesity, incidentally, which feeds back into it. I see somebody has turn society into a meat grinder. People go in one end, meat comes out the other. Just like in Judge Dredd.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, during the World War, in the UK, I was just there a little while ago, and I was speaking to them about the decline of bees in the UK, and they're trying to actually reintroduce bees from New Zealand back into the UK again, because they decimated their crops. Well, the intention was to grow more food to be able to look after the troops and look after their communities. But what they did in that process, and I'm sure people at the time were educated about what they were actually doing, was they were destroying natural habitats in the process. So you're destroying natural habitat in which these bees particularly live in, and then expecting fantastic crops to grow, and it didn't, obviously, because they went through massive food shortages. The agricultural business failed miserably, and the intents just didn't follow through. And I'm sure that there were people educated enough to realize that that was what they were doing. And you can still see remnants of it now, and the ecosystem will never get back to what it used to be in the UK, at least without a solid, consolidated effort by every person. It's going to be incredibly difficult.
Especially if they continue the amount of chemtrailing that they're doing.
Oh, wow. The chemtrails over there were something spectacular. I'll tell you what. Having a glass of water that would change its flavor from almost day to day. And I was there during harvest season as well. So that's a great excuse to get those planes up there, you know? And within minutes, the beautiful blue sky would be gray and overcast for the rest of the day. And it was really quite bizarre. And scary, you know, because I was working on the edit of my book, and I was like, well, there it is, you know. The proof is in the custard or something. I don't know what that's saying.
The proof is in the pudding.
That's the one. Thank you. Yeah, it was 100% there. And trying to discuss it with family members in a genteel manner, I found very, very difficult to do, because it was something that I felt very passionately about. And they were open. They were very respectful of my opinions, but obviously they had theirs as well. But it was beyond anything I've seen before, particularly during that harvest season, because it wasn't so bad when I got there. But yeah, as soon as those crops started coming down, it was phenomenal.
Sabotaging the harvest, eh?
Well, that's it. Sabotaging the harvest, having a great excuse to have those planes flying over, because a lot of people are under the impression that it assists with the harvest.
And I'm sure it's just a coincidence that Monsanto released aluminium-resistant seeds. And then when the drought strikes, I'm sure it's also a very good coincidence that they've got drought-resistant seeds too.
Well, that's it, you know. They've got some bloody smart people working for them. It's just they're in the wrong industry.
I think they're in the right industry, because what's the difference between intelligence and wisdom? Right? I was just thinking about this. You could kill somebody and take their money. be a smart move, right? Especially if it was enough money. And if you could get away with the murder, that seems like an intelligent killer. It's not a very wise person, though.
No.
Yeah. It's kind of like you have a ripple effect with everything that you do in your life. Everybody listening to this broadcast right now has a potential that this might actually bring them to some new realization today, some kind of aha moment, etc. Like, maybe I should quit my job and start writing a book too. Yeah. you know, and I would say that that's probably one of the most freeing things you can do is just say, frack it. You give up everything that you currently got and you do what feels right instead.
And society is not the most accepting of that. It's been an interesting ride for the last almost year working on the book. I mean, I did have jobs at the beginning, but I was very lucky to have a partner at the time that was very supportive of it, and I worked with him on his businesses. But the priority focus was on the book. And I was very lucky to have that opportunity, and I seized that with every part of myself possible. But, you know, you taught from a young age, especially in the artist realm as such, oh, you'll never make any money from that. You're going to be a starving artist, you know, and that rings in your head over and over again. But at the end of the day, if you've got something to say, I think it's really important, if you've got the ability to translate it, to do it. Mm. I'm a big supporter of artists.
Well, I think it's kind of like you get this compulsion to do what you, it's not like you think it out and you plan everything in meticulous detail. What was it Tesla said? It's not 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. It's actually 99% inspiration. That's where all the best things in your life will ever come from, is from your inspiration and not ignoring it.
That's it. And it could also be viewed as intuition as well, which I guess some people view as a sort of hippie term as such, but your gut instinct's bloody important as well in that, in combination with the inspiration too. It's just knowing that it's right.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, intrinsically. And part of what's happening to society, I think, is we've become quite detached from what makes us really, really special, like in the so-called animal kingdom and whatnot. I don't see any other animals building complex machines. I don't see them trying to explore space. You know, I haven't seen no secret mosquito UN council meeting or something like that where they talk about how much blood they can scheme off the human race today. There's probably ones with bankers who do that, but the difference being that I think we've been given a choice. We've got all these abilities, both normal and paranormal, I believe. Mm-hmm. And if we choose not to use them, then all it is just a wasted opportunity, nothing more, nothing less. And it's kind of like when parents see their children off to college or high school or something like that, their great hope is that they'll learn how to take care of themselves and won't need to be mothered or fathered anymore. Mm-hmm. But you always let that support still be there if they really need it. And I think that's kind of the human race's relationship with God. You know, go for your life, son. I'm here if you need my help, in a spiritual sense of the word. But
yeah,
other than that, you're pretty much on your own, son.
Time to jump out of the nest.
Yeah.
Which is important. It's really important for us to learn how to be self-sustainable. But maybe that's what society's forgotten, is self-sustainability at the end of it all. I mean, how many people are prepared for should the worst happen? And I mean, I can't predict years. I mean, I haven't done nearly enough research to start making predictions. But, you know, how many people can say that they have that storage of food set aside, or, you know, the ability to be able to live in a house that's completely self-sustainable from electricity, and being able to build a fire and being able to grow your own crops? And there's not many. I mean, I'm guilty of it too. I would love to learn. I'm allowed myself the time to do it. It is definitely on my list. But I think it's an important factor of learning how to survive on your own. Wilderness survival, you know?
Well, that and the kind of Walking Dead scenario where you'd be where you'd be surrounded by zombies and everything like that, and you're going to wind up having to fend for yourself. I think that's more or less just a just an analogy of just daily life in general. You know, you're walking around, you're surrounded by freaking zombies who're just trying to take everything from you, and everybody else is your enemy, and what have you. You've got a close-knit community, et cetera. But other than that, the world's gone to crap.
And even with those scenarios that are being thrown around a lot at the moment, like The Walking Dead and all the zombie movies coming out and everything, they isolate people very quickly. I mean, people are very distrusting of each other. They don't band together as a community and fight together as one. It's very much a cliquey sort of environment. And us as human beings, it's our natural desire to be a part of something.
Oh, we're tribal.
As a tribe or a village or it's within our makeup, but you know, the wonderful media out there with all those fantastic advertisements or commercials, whatever you want to call them, you know, it's all about keeping us apart. I mean, in Toronto, they don't even have video stores anymore. I mean, if you wanted to have the chill out night with your friends and stuff, you load it all onto a TV. You don't have all the video stores are closed down except the niche market one. There's only one that I know of as well. So it's keeping people separated in their homes. And, you know, and all these an insane amount of television shows. It's scary. But, yeah, trying to defeat a very important aspect of what makes us human.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Tribalism is part of our makeup, just like parabens. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We are sponsored by the Range of Illusion by Bryony Holmes. Ladies and gentlemen, the wonderful book is on the homepage there. It's also another book, The Crowdfunding Revolution by Kevin Lawton. Check out our other sponsors as well, The High Tea Cafe in New Lynn and The Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga. Also, the wonderful Blue Shield, which can broadcast a signal that's stronger than the other electromagnetic radiation signals and stuff coming off of your electronic devices. When you broadcast a stronger signal over the top of other radio frequencies, every single radio frequency tends to get cancelled out and just tune into the most of highly available signal. So that's what this one does. You either have a little portable one that has a radius of a couple of meters, or you can have a plug-in one that has a radius of like 15, 20 meters. There's industrial models as well. So you can basically bathe any space that you want in a protective shield, so that way your cells don't get degraded from all of this radiation and all of that kind of stuff going on. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Author of The Range of Illusion, a Provinces novel. A Story of Secrecy, A Saga of the Self, and A Citizen's Search for Truth, right there on the homepage of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Welcome back, Bryony.
Hello.
Now, what actually got you started looking into, shall we say, the truth? Because I don't know how it happens for everybody. It's different, I think. And a lot of people never start looking for the truth. They're quite happy to drink beer and watch sports games on TV for their entire life and work a slave job that they hate that doesn't inspire them creatively. I don't understand the mentality, but...
There was a few factors. I've always been very, very questioning from a young age. I discovered the Easter Bunny didn't exist by writing a letter to him after my parents had gone to bed. So there's definitely been a questioning personality to me. One of them was going into a supermarket about 8 years ago and seeing the size of chicken. And I was like, that's not right. And the person I was with was like, oh, no, that's normal. I was like, no, that's not, there's no way that that's normal. And started researching into that to a certain degree. At the time, it was unfortunate because I wasn't around a group of people who would be comfortable discussing the ideas. But as time wore on, I started to find those people and started discussing it and started realizing that there was a lot more to it. The conflict in media, I've always had a strong... mainstream media. I don't want to use too negative of a word, but I'm going to do it. Distestation of it, just never agreed because the information would change from day to day. It would conflict with itself. So I actually went off finding my own information from there on in because I was getting frustrated. I wanted to know what was going on in the world, but the information I knew that was being provided wasn't accurate. So yeah, there was a few different ideas floating around. There was readily available documentaries that were great sources for information that you could branch from, such as Zeitgeist. The first movie was had quite an impression on me, and I started researching from there and trying to find those common ideas and theories. And it just kind of branched out and jumped into the rabbit hole and never really came back.
Mm-hmm. Did you go through the stages of depression?
Yep, I won't lie. It was very, very hard to process. I think the main frustration from it was the fact that I was only learning now, and I felt like I'd wasted some time. I gradually started to get over it when I watched Thrive was a nice documentary for that because it is full of hope and positivity. Zeitgeist can be quite heavy-hitting as a first sort of intro to that world of information. It was the frustration more than anything else that got me down, which I had to let go of because I wasn't going to be productive with that mindset. So I kicked myself in the behind and started putting my information down in an artistic manner.
Well, at least you found an outlet. I think it was kind of pretty similar to me. I mean, my outlet was filmmaking and, ranting bollocks, so naturally I became a YouTuber and talk show host. But it occurs to me that without the outlets, it's kind of like, you know, when you're really, really sad, but you're not sad enough to cry, and you stay mm-hmm. sad longer?
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like that. Getting the content out there and expressing what it is that you truly feel is a way of actually dealing with these things that you see and these things that you know.
That's it. And being in a world where, I guess the terminology conspiracy theorists is condoned, you know, and obviously theorist was added on there for a reason, but discussing these to some people, to people who are unawares, to them, which are outlandish ideas, you get called some pretty interesting terms, you know, and I think a big part of it is getting involved in the community and being able to discuss these ideas openly. And that's how you learn further as well, is by discussing and by sharing knowledge or receiving knowledge. That's what it's really about. And then you grow within it as a person. You feel like you're progressing further because there's a mountain of information. It's never ending. And it, I found that that was something I had to accept, is I was never going to know it all. But I take great enjoyment out of researching on a daily basis, at least something, to grow upon what I already have.
Mm. You ever heard of the story of the cosmic schmuck?
No, I haven't. Please do share.
Well, how do you know if you're the cosmic schmuck?
There's no way of knowing.
No, there is. If you never question whether or not you're the cosmic schmuck.
Ah, fair play.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about this earlier. It's how do you know if you're still good? It's if you question whether or not you've become evil.
Very valid.
That's how you know you're still intelligent. Is you still question whether or not you're not. Am I a dumbass? You see, and I was thinking this, our rigidly held beliefs, if they're not analysed and reviewed on a regular basis, become the very beliefs that turn us into exactly the opposite of what we believe ourselves to be.
That's it. Constantly questioning everything.
You know, even things that you've already questioned and already come to conclusions on, you know, maybe I'll just question them again, you know.
I got 5 minutes before my next meeting. Let's do it. No, it's I forgot the word I was going to use. It's, for lack of a better word, it's bloody important to keep addressing what your belief system is, because we constantly change as human beings as well. And the information is always growing out there too. And it's being released gradually, and people are constantly researching. And I mean, that was what some of our greatest inventors ever did, was they constantly questioned what they were doing. It's innate within us to do so. It's just, you know, people are scared of what they're going to find a lot of the time.
Mm. Well, and they should be. You get what you pay for.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's no joke, son. You know, this is the scariest freaking world ever, man. I mean, it would be nice if all the really horrible things that you see in the movies, like all the tortures, the rapes, the mass killings and shootings and things of that nature, weren't real and inspired by true events, if they were actually totally fictional, as the disclaimers suggest.
Mm.
But it's not. I can assure you there's no creativity left in Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Whatever the hell they're putting in front of you that looks horrific and nasty, I can assure you there is stuff that is real, that is happening, that is far worse than they could ever come up with.
Yep, I agree with that.
That's the dark part. And this goes into the point, if you're going to be thinking positively, again, try and challenge that belief. Try to think incredibly negatively for a second, like how much negativity really is there? Can you fill yourself up with it? Can you imagine the pain and suffering of 40 million people on food stamps, for example? Can you understand the feeling of loss of mothers all across America who have lost soldiers in wars for oil? Mm. There's so much pain. So much suffering in every single spectrum. It doesn't matter which sector of society. Everybody's traumatized in some way, shape, or form and still going through it. Even the people who look really well adjusted and what have you. I've spoken to some gurus and all of that kind of thing, but they're just like me. They are in pain, and the only way that they can keep the pain from overtaking their life is to heal other people, because they're incapable at the moment to heal themselves. So they're trying to make do of a bad situation.
I agree with that. Really do. It's once again the community aspect that we were discussing earlier. You know, joining each other together and trying to be the best person that you can possibly be in any situation, bringing light to somebody's day under any circumstances, you know, and just approaching somebody with a smile can go a million miles. It's very simple, but it does work. It really does.
Well, it quite literally can go a million miles, because you have a look at these studies that have come out. Have you seen these studies where they have a look and they track smiles?
I haven't seen the smiles ones, but I've seen similar stuff. But go ahead. Yeah. I'd like to look at them.
It was kind of like Oh.
Paying it forward?
No. You know brain synapse, how they fire and they go round in circles and they go in, and they seem to go in random directions, and there's a lot of activity, and as certain electrons fire in particular parts of the brain, it sets off all these trees of electricity that go shoo, when people are locking in memories or thinking really hard and things like that. It's so similar, just tracking the movement, the direction, the smile, and the amount of people for whom that smile carries over to, that's what it's like. It's kind of like a tree of electric light that's kind of permeating out with ripple effects across an entire city by one or two or 10 people smiling at a completely random person, who will pass that on average 7 people, and each of those 7 people will pass it on to an average of 6 people, and then so on and so on. It dissipates, but because of the fact that they're going on around and around and around, it never gets lower than 3, and so it's always exponentially growing itself. So it gets to the point where you realize that me opening my mouth to reveal my teeth at a completely random stranger in a very friendly fashion for absolutely no reason can literally change the entire consciousness level of a city.
I believe that, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. So when people lose hope, I think it's because they forget how easy it is to make a difference.
Mm.
You just have to get the hell out of your own way.
That's it. That's exactly it. We're our own worst enemies when it comes to that. We can only expect other people to do so much for us. We've got to take responsibility for ourselves, you know?
Procrastination doesn't help a terribly large amount with that. And we all do it from time to time. I am so...
Of course.
So guilty of that.
I definitely do.
Yeah. Well, at least we can admit this to ourselves. I really hate those people who just can't admit any of their flaws at all. You know, they go, ask them, hey, do you have any flaws? And they go, flaws. It's like, dude, are you the frickin' almighty? No. Are you the Prime Minister of Israel? No? Then you're not all powerful. I was just joking there. Obviously, yeah, not implying anything. The other element the other element in this whole kind of getting activated and getting out there, which I think is probably the most important, or at least it was for me, is feeling like you don't have a choice. When your back's against the wall, where you can't cope with whatever's going on, and you have no choice but to change, that's when you get off your ass. And you don't sit back down on it for a while, I think.
You have to. It's got to be done, because that's when you don't want to get caught in that vicious circle, you know? Well, and that's where, I mean, just something as small as... one of my characters in a book, I won't give a spoiler, but there is a moment where there is a need for a change in perception. And I'm trying to do this without a spoiler. An unpleasant situation occurs and it changes her perception immediately. You know, the clouds go over and they go gray, and she's taught that it's a matter of her changing her own perception, that she's still in the same beautiful place that she was in. It's just she's chosen to view it in another manner. And for us to go out with that attitude of choosing our attitude first thing in the morning, waking up out of bed and going, I'm going to be in a good mood today and I'm going to share that with people, it makes a world of difference. For ourselves, for the community, for everybody around us.
Hmm.
You know? I mean, I love the random smiles on the street. It changes your perception, but we're also responsible for taking control of that too. First thing in the morning.
Yeah.
No wrong side of the bed, you know?
Well, yeah, yeah. Although, I like this Limp Bizkit song, Break Stuff. What was it? There's a lot of swear words in it. I'll see if I can remember it. Some days when you don't want to wake up, everything is fucked. Everybody sucks. And you don't really know why, but you want to justify ripping someone's head off. Some days you do wake up angry. I've just been wondering, do I dream and then wake up feeling angry from my dream and then not being able to remember it? Or when I wake up, is it because I'm living the dream that I'm so angry I can't sleep very well?
That's a really interesting question. That's hard out on the psychology aspect of things. I mean, I think both aspects have validity in that for sure. I won't lie. Sometimes I still wake up a little grumpy, but it's a daily practice. It certainly is. And it takes a huge amount of discipline to be aware of your perception. I mean, it's like being aware of every single breath that you take. And some people in the world are aware of every single breath and appreciate every breath that they take. I'm definitely not there, but it's a training program. It's a discipline, I think. And being aware of it constantly, which is, not easy. Easier said than done, for sure.
Mm-mm. Well, I think if you don't experience struggle, you don't grow. You know, it's just that simple.
Agreed.
I'm 6'4". You know how I got this big? Through massive, really, extremely excruciating bad growing pains when I was a teenager. Mm. It was nasty, all right? But now I'm huge. You know, and I think it's the same for us all, psychologically speaking. You know, it's like, I don't know. What is it with some people? They think that, oh, I've got my qualifications at school or university now. Suddenly I don't have to think. And it's like, well, dude, actually, when you were at school and when you were doing university, they weren't teaching you to think anyway. They weren't teaching you critical thinking. They were trying to teach you how to be critical of people who can still think despite being educated. All right.
Well said.
That's the thing. You've got to ostracize and what's the thing? Silo mentality, all the kids out, you know, tell them they're brighter than everybody else and everybody else is just a dumb cog in the machine by comparison to you. You're great. You're brilliant. You're going to be the new rulers of the world. You're going to be the elite, blah, 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 blah. And you get people so full of themselves that they lose respect for everybody else, including themselves.
And then they lose themselves. Yeah. It's as you said before, I mean, you grow from it, right? You learn from your mistakes. I mean, that saying didn't come from nowhere. It's about applying the information afterwards and realizing that there was a lesson learned and applying it, perhaps. I mean, that's a theory. Once again, easier said than done, but it's in hindsight, you know, looking back on things and realizing how you grew as a person, because I mean, as I was saying, with all this information going through it and first initially trying to understand what was going on and the frustration at realizing how much time I'd lost, in hindsight, at least I found some information and I'm developing a collection of thoughts and theories and ideas that I can apply to a form of art. I'm very lucky to have been able to work that out, but there's certain triggers that happen that we can easily miss if we're not sort of tuned in.
Well, it's about just kind of like awareness, you know. Mm-hmm. I'll walk into a room and I'll go Masonic floor, pyramid in the corner, and then another person looks at, walks into the same room and goes, oh, orchids.
Yeah.
You know, you gain a new level of awareness and everything suddenly looks different. It's almost like it's almost being colorblind, and then all of a sudden you walk in and now you see things in full living color.
Mm.
You know? I think that's the amount of difference. I did like a oh my God, this really long rap. It was just ridiculous. I would really love to actually read it out to you because it's actually freaking hilarious. Like just how funny a normal day in a shall we say conspiracy theorist life is, because everything's infinitely worse because you're not ignorant of everything that you see. Have you noticed that?
Oh, for sure. Definitely. You can't miss a beat. I mean, we're surrounded by so many different propaganda models at the moment, and trying to see through them is imperative to understanding what's going on in the world and knowing what to research on certain days and where to find the information and trying to discern the truth from these big issues that are currently going on. You know, with Syria, for example, everybody thought that the United States was going to stay away from that. And I was like, oh, I don't know. This seems, terrible situation. But yeah, lo and behold, the United States was trying their hardest to get in there. With everybody viewing it with such positivity of, oh, no, we'll go in, we'll go and help, we'll help assist in the situation. But I don't know, it's a very... I need to probably research a little further before bringing it up, but it was a similar situation where I was viewing it with a little bit of negativity and angst, and it was a terrible situation to witness anyways. And then just knowing that the follow-through from that wasn't going to be as positive as it should have been, you know, assisting a common country in a time of need.
Mm. Well, it is a very serious situation, and one might even call it quite a sad. The whole thing about Syria is $700 billion pipeline from Israel through the Ukraine. Incidentally, they bomb Syria, then they're taking out the Ukraine. Oh, how does this work, this geopolitics thing? You know? I mean, it's just these tiny bits of information. That's all they need to put into the mainstream media in order to make everybody suspicious of scumbaggery, but they never do. They never put into... I mean, they give you 30 seconds of information. And sure, the information that they're reporting is often accurate. But what they'll do is they'll miss out 90% of the important stuff and cover 10% that doesn't really matter. And as a result, nobody thinks it matters at all. And doesn't question it any further, do they? Isn't that a problem? That other people have as well as me. Am I the only one who sees this happening? Am I the only one who thought to myself, you know what? The media is totally full of crap.
You're not alone.
Yeah. With no training, no credibility, I'm better at the media than the media is.
Agreed.
And that's because they don't have any credibility either, except the difference between them and me is they claim that they are credible, whereas I have never done so. I've always claimed, of course, that I am incredible.
It's a matter of, I think, correct me if I'm wrong in saying what you do is free thought media.
New media.
From the discussions that I've heard you do, is there's a lot. There's good banter. It's healthy. It's two people coming to. Some kind of not a verdict, but trying to deduct to a certain form of truth, like an idea that is valid. Whereas the mainstream media, I mean, you get some people who are actually intelligent, and they get shut down off you know, CNN or one of Murdoch's his many media empires, and they have something credible to say, and their microphone switched off, you know, like.
It happens all too often, unfortunately. Brian E. Holmes is my guest, ladies and gentlemen, author of The Range of Illusion. The book is available on the homepage of thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Also, don't forget the other book there, The Crowdfunding Revolution by Kevin Lawton. In fact, that gives me an important point, because not only is the show about sort of awakening and looking at things from a different perspective, maybe even going into a little bit of the absurd and even fiction itself in order to discern truth, but on the same time, it's actually making a new business model. Okay, previously, business has been about committing the most scumbaggery and extorting the most amount of money for the least amount of effort. I think business needs to change from that upper echelon model to what it used to be, perhaps what it should be, where you provide a good service and or product and people give you money so that you can continue to provide that service and provide those products. The Vinnie Eastwood Show is a service for activists, thinkers, people all over the world. People have a person, at least, I don't know if anybody else would have confessed, but was prevented from committing suicide without me even knowing about it, simply by listening to this show, realizing that there is hope, that there is laughter amidst all the scumbaggery, no matter how much your family disses you, no matter how much of a scumbag your boss is, or anything like that. If you listen to this show, you can have a laugh and you can deal with it. People value that a lot, more than I even realize. I could never even conceive of giving anybody $500 for nothing. You know, I don't have that kind of money. I don't know what somebody would be doing in order to justify that kind of thing. I've been given donations like that, and larger. And just the cost of living alone, just surviving, is actually quite expensive, and it's getting even worse these days, isn't it? So please, ladies and gentlemen, your contributions, in the crowdfunding sense of the word, for your subscriptions and your donations to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, are the principal reason why the show still exists and has been going strong for a good 4 years. So go to the homepage, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. We'll be back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness and scumbaggery, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. I think no greater truth has ever come to me in my life, you know. Hey, all this stuff's really crazy. Well, that makes me really angry. You know, actually, maybe instead of getting angry, I could laugh my ass off at it instead. Let's see if that works. Oh my God, it works a treat, mate. Keeping calm amidst insanity, I think, is a very important tool, especially when you're surrounded by it all freaking day. Hi. Brian E. Holmes is my very special guest, the author of The Range of Illusion, a provinces novel, a story of secrecy, a saga of the self, and a citizen's search for truth. Welcome back.
Thanks, Vinnie.
Now, I don't know if you'd allow me. It might take a couple minutes. What if I just have like a bit of a rant about how hard life is for a conspiracy theorist?
I'd love to hear your rant.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know life is hard for conspiracy theorists. Most people go through their life, and when they wake up, they go to work and come home, go to sleep and repeat. They think it's easy, but are they just deceived? I wake up and I get pissed off at the sound of my alarm, which pierces through the silence like a lightsaber in my brain. Look out the window and say, oh, it's a beautiful day. There's only one there's a chemtrail. And then when you get out your polyester sheets, they're made with oil, which causes cancer when in contact with your skin. Put on your slippers that are manufactured by some description of sweatshop in India. Go take a WikiLeak. Have a glass of fluoridated water with more heavy metals than a Metallica concert. Have a bowl of genetically modified cornflakes, which cause tumors and sterility. sterility and rats with a little homogenized pasteurized milk. There's all the good stuff taken out of it and the cream boiled out of it so your body can't access any nutrition from it. You make a coffee in a metal thermos cup with boiled water that concentrates the fluoride, which is an industrial poison. Pop in some artificially chemically fertilized freeze-dried Vietnamese pick-a-diet instant coffee. Pop in a teaspoon or two of white, bleached, poisonous diabetes-causing sugar grown by some poor sap who gets stood over by the mega agribusiness that forced the price down, and when his crops fail and he can't support his family, he commits suicide to relieve his family of the debt he put them in. And then you go out your door, getting instantly bathed in the concentrated pollution of the city with all the cell phone towers irradiating you, giving you ADHD-like symptoms, and you jump in your... And you jump in your car that was manufactured in your home country, which incidentally no longer manufactures anything because it's all been outsourced. You pull into a gas station, top up with some 70% tax petrol, you fuel up on the way to work, where you spend countless hours stuck in a traffic jam, moving slower than the pace of 2001 A Space Odyssey. You're getting ever more stressed, being conscious that stress causes illness, you worry about illness, which makes you more stressed. You get to work. You have to pay for parking every couple of hours, so you can't even enjoy your lunch break, as you rush to the awaiting meter to give it more money, to pay for the temporary usage of a parking space that the tax I pay on petrol already paid for. You've got a boss who undermines your brilliant ideas and then gets rich off them while personally insulting you daily. The promotion they promise with the better work hours, the higher pay, more benefits gets constantly postponed, or given to the bratty child or the business owner. You only have enough time and money to buy something from McDonald's during lunch, which you don't even have to get out of your car for, which contributes to your daily prevention of exercise in any form, which makes you depressed, fat, angry, sick, stressed, and unproductive. The Macca's beef patty is called 100% prime beef, which is actually a trademark brand name when there's actually about 14% real beef in it. The cheese is one chemical compound away from polyurethane, which you use for making raincoats, with French fries that in several years don't break down because even microbes won't touch it. You wash that down with some Coca-Cola, which costs a few cents that they charge you a dollar for. When it comes off the ships, it's a level 6 biotoxin, which if you breathe one lungful of the fumes will kill you in seconds. They ship it via hazmat truck to a local bottling plant where they water it down with municipal, fluoridated, chlorinated, privately owned water company water and sell it to you with the catchphrase, "It's the real thing." It's laced with caffeine and sugar to get you really hyper and addicted to it, adding in some salt as well to ensure that as soon as you're done drinking it on the way back to work, you feel like you need another one. On the way back from McDonald's, you get a speeding ticket for going a few kilometres over the speed limit on a road where nobody was except the cop. You give him your licence with your name in all capital letters, which is exactly the same as you would for a corporation, because the name on that licence isn't you at all, unless you accept that it is, you're frack, bro. You get back to work to spend the last few hours of the day bemoaning the lack of work ethic and ethics in general of all your co-workers, bosses, and the fracking customers, and when you're just about to blow your brains out, you get to go home. By that I mean sitting hours of traffic or continuing to ponder the merits of blowing your frickin' brains out. Eventually you get home from your slave job to your slave block apartment, your slave wife and slave kids that scream like a civil defense air raid siren. The missus has gotten more masculine as you've gotten more feminine, so she's in control of the house, so you feel like you've got a second boss, and in your first day off work in 7 weeks, she makes you mow the lawn. And then you try to forget all of this and the frustration by watching television, which has a flicker rate and the consciousness has a flicker rate faster than the conscious mind can process. So you slip into a suggestible dreamlike state where you're more open to believe the BS you see on the news, the bad fathers you see in the comedies, and the murder of loved ones by those they hold most dear, setting you up for unrealistic expectations in life and a conditioning that results in learned helplessness. You eat dinner out of a frozen packeted meal that has been irradiated to keep the bugs off and make it safe for consumption, which is further irradiated in a microwave that Russia banned in the 70s due to a public health risk. Because they got students in a trial to eat microwave food 3 meals a day and call off the trial by day 10 because they all started to develop adult onset leukemia. It splits the enzymes in the food to a point where your body can't recognize it or process it and store it later for cancer. While you eat it, you watch the TV, laughing at Chris Rock. The wife asks why you're laughing so hard. I reply it's because he's black and angry. She called me a racist and turned off the TV. I later discovered the comedy sketch was called Chris Rock, Blacker and Angrier. You sit and ignore your wife. Don't listen to your kids. Stay up too late. Don't get enough sleep, which stresses you out and causes disrupted sleep. Knowing what's going on really sucks, bro.
That was brilliant.
Sounds about right, eh?
I had to hold back from some giggles throughout that, to be honest, so it could be heard clearly. That was, in a nutshell, very well done. When did you write it?
Oh, it was just, I was over at my mate Mike's place. I go over there maybe every other weekend and we record some music or something like that. And every now and again I'll get this kind of like spurge of perhaps an idea that I had earlier on or something that I wanted to finish. And there was this, just this rant about an ordinary day. And it took me, about 40 minutes to write all that.
Nice.
You know, it's just pouring out of me. I think it kind of encapsulates precisely what we're talking about here, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, that's exactly it. From earlier on in the conversation of what it's like to, when you kind of start learning a little bit more and things come to light a little bit more, you become a little more aware, you become a little more frustrated, but at the same time, the love of laughter is a wonderful thing.
Well, I think particularly laughing at the horrible things, because that, if that rant is taken seriously, it seems really freaking depressing. But if you've already seen it and that's what you think anyway, the mere fact that somebody's saying what you already thought is really hilarious. Have you noticed that? When something's really, really true and a comedian picks up on it, that's the funniest jokes ever, man.
It's funny because it's true.
Yeah. Now, is everything funny because it's true? Not really. No. I mean, water is hydrogen and two oxygen particles. That's not funny. Although it's true.
We found it funny.
I think it was more because of the way I said it rather than the actual structure of the molecules themselves.
Agreed.
It could have something to do with it.
The art and delivery.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. I always constantly getting better, I've found. But sometimes I still like massively screw up with timing and stuff like that. And people are just like, oh, that's not funny, bro. And I was like, damn. Missed my opportunity. Well, tell us about your life then, Brian, eh? I mean, a whole lot of the people that I talk to, especially those who have authored books, often have these kind of professional sort of mindsets when it comes to things. They're quite good at management. It's kind of like either juggling many balls at the same time or boiling many pots on the same stove at the same time. It's a multitasking thing I found with a lot of authors that I've interviewed.
Right. No, that does make sense with the research along with the actual writing and the construct. And it definitely is kind of like dancing around in the kitchen. But I was born in South Africa originally, lived in Botswana predominantly. I've lived in 7 countries to date, with a couple of stints in the States for just out of curiosity and interest. I've been deemed as a bit of a culture vulture. I love to meet new people. I love to explore people's beliefs and their values. And I love people. I really do. I think every person has so much potential. And I've been very lucky that I've resonated and I found people who are of similar mindsets, very excited and very have positive attitudes with, you know, obviously the reality of things coming in every now and then. But I'm definitely a people person. And that's why I wrote my book, was because I was meeting people from all over the world and I wanted to make a heavy subject a little bit more comfortable to understand. And with elements of satire and adventure in it. So that's where that came from. I'm self-educated, didn't do the whole uni thing due to circumstance, which is probably a wonderful thing in itself.
You actually got to experience real life in the real world instead of being stuck in an education institution, having debt that you can't pay off for the bulk of your working life. Dodge that bullet.
Yep. That's the one. It was kind of like the universe conspired it that way, to be honest. It was a situation where I was being viewed as an overseas citizen in the UK because I do have a British passport. They said, you've been out of the country for too long, so we're going to charge you overseas fees. And I was like, well, can't even open a bank account, so how am I going to afford to go to university at like £30,000 a year? It's insane amounts of money. So I moved to New Zealand. And I was intending to just travel for a year, and I fell in love with it. I'll be back there at some point. But that's how it all came. And when I was 5 years old, I knew I'd move to the place where the caves glowed, and I did. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, they're the Waitomo caves. Not to be confused with the Black Homo caves.
What are those?
That was a bad joke.
I haven't heard of that.
That's because they don't exist. I made them up.
Okay, fair enough.
It was just a crappy pun.
That timing. Waitomo was amazing. I did that within the first couple of months of being there and got to see my glowworms and moved to Queenstown and got surrounded by beautiful scenery, which did help with all my research at the time because I got to wake up and see the mountains and the lake and realize, oh, it's all going to work out. So I was very lucky with the environment I had.
I've been to Queenstown and stayed there for a couple of days. I'd probably say out of all the spots in New Zealand where there's actually like a town there, the best, the most picturesque stuff you'll ever see in your frickin' life.
It's amazing. It really is. And the people down there, the ones who haven't disappeared, because it's so transient. I mean, you meet people constantly and they're always off onto the next adventure. But the ones who are consistently there in the community are beautiful people. They really are. Very lucky and privileged to have met all those wonderful people down there.
Well, you kind of have to be in the middle of the deep south, cold in New Zealand. I hate that stuff, man. I've heard that. Well,
not a fan of the cold, huh?
Well, it's not so much the cold that I'm not a fan of. It's when it's colder inside than outside because a Scottish person designed the house that way to make it more like home. That's what I don't like, watching my olive oil freeze at room temperature.
Yeah, right.
All right. Having mushrooms growing out of the woodwork in the house.
Right.
Having a layer of condensation when you wake up in the morning on the surface of your mink blanket, which you put onto the floor, which drips all the water onto it. You know? In fact, oh my God, Epic Rant 2. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be about how much I freaking hate the cold. I really, really hate the cold, all right? With a vengeance. If you can't escape from it, it's painful. It actually is painful. It's extremely depressing to live in. I mean, people in the Northern Hemisphere, you've got things like building regulations.
Right.
Like, oh my God. Luxury. You know, things like double glazed windows, insulation. Dude, we have weatherboards missing and like an inch of like wallpaper between you and the outside, which is like 3 degrees Celsius.
The price of paradise, eh?
I mean, you think, oh, we've got like 6 feet of snow during the winter, eh? I mean, you guys don't know anything about the cold. Yeah, but bro, do you get away from the cold as soon as you get inside? Do you have to take off your massive jackets and things of that nature that you walk around in? If you live in Dunedin and you're a student, you don't take that stuff off, bro. You go to bed in it, you walk around, you make your coffee in it. That's how you live. That or a sleeping bag that you can tie around you with a belt and walk around wearing that in the house.
I can relate to that.
it snowed once while we were down there, and we made this giant snowball out of it and put it on the front lawn. We got about 30 minutes of sunshine a day. The sun shone through the front of our house from between 9:30 in the morning and 10 in the morning, when it only just first rises, when it's at its weakest. The rest of it, virtual total darkness outside of the street. That snowball 6 months later was still there in our front yard. And it hadn't snowed once, bro. since we made it. That's how freaking cold I'm talking about. That's why I hate it, and I will never forget.
Queenstown in the summertime. There you go.
See, now that's not that bad. I'm talking about, like, Dunedin. Dead cold of winter. Have you ever stayed in Dunedin?
No, I haven't done that. No.
Again, dodge that bullet.
Okay, good to know.
Man, I should start a tourism business, you know, just tell people the places you really don't want to go. So, you know, just to avoid contaminating your experience of New Zealand. For instance, if you're only going to travel one of the islands, travel the South Island. Repeat that. If you're going to come to New Zealand and travel one of the islands, driving around, travel the South Island. Vastly superior. In every single conceivable way, in terms of picturesque quality.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
There's just no freaking comparison.
No.
North's like farm country, maybe little forests and stuff like that, gorgeous perhaps. But when you got golden tussock grass as far as the eye can see, with beautiful natural rock formations coming out of it, mountains with snow caps in the background, pristine
West
lakes.
Coast sunsets, right?
Yeah. It's insanely beautiful. It actually, it's kind of like, I think that's why they call it God Zone, because you're like, there's some frickin' divinity in some of that landscape, mate.
And a nice thing about the South Island, too, is you can trace your produce back to the farmer and go meet him and shake his hand and say, thank you, those apples were awesome.
You can indeed.
It's close. And the meat, too. It's really special down there for food produce.
Mm. Yeah, a friend of mine, when we went to Dunedin to go be students together, we stopped off at Kentucky Fried Chicken. The further south we went, the better the Kentucky Fried Chicken got. And it was quite extraordinary because it's also the same with restaurateuring. Like, you come to Auckland, you get yourself a pork belly with crackling and cinnamon and apple on a bed of mashed potato and kumara. You'd be looking at about $36 for that meal. You go down to Christchurch, a city about half the size, you'd be looking at paying about $12 for that same meal, about a third the price.
Right. And it's a lot of it's about locally sourcing, and the farmers are still pretty old school as well, which is pretty awesome. I think there's a little less GMO interference when it comes to that, and hormones, and the farmers still take pride in what they produce. A lot of them anyways, and they can be found. That's something that I do miss about the South Island. The North Island, you could find it, but it was just a little more readily available at a price that wasn't exorbitant, you know?
Especially in Auckland. I mean, living prices in Auckland are completely insane. Like, it's getting out of control. We're going to be like the New York of New Zealand pretty soon, if not already.
When I lived there on my own, how long ago was it? About 6 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, for a tiny studio apartment, it was $250 a week. And we're talking like, it was tiny. You could barely fit a bed in there, you know, like it was small. And $250 a week, that's a lot out of a paycheck. You know, you're looking like just over $1,000 a month, you know, on a regular salary, it's not easy to do. And then you've got all these wonderful, farmers markets and stuff in Auckland that can be found, and it's just unaffordable for a healthy, sustainable way of life. It's difficult, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't think Monsanto and all of that stuff. In fact, we're having some food bill legislation passed in New Zealand, and people might actually, like, who are trying to resist the food bill and everything like that, might get angry at me saying, oh, this legislation's being passed because it hasn't passed. But it's going to pass. It doesn't matter what we protest or what we do. They always do it. The question is holding them to account and figuring out exactly what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And there's provisions in this food bill for Monsanto employees or quote-unquote private contractors who are armed. Incidentally, Monsanto now owns Z, formerly known as Blackwater, the world's largest private...
Oh, I did not realize that they own that now.
Yeah.
That's scary.
That's the world's largest private army.
Right.
And so their employees...
Carolina, they're based out of A.
Allegedly. I don't know.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. Right.
So, yeah, they can come onto your property under the food bill. And here's the kicker. Without a warrant. And...
Wow.
They can be immune from all criminal prosecution. So they're armed, they come onto your place unannounced, and if they kill you or break something, you can't do nothing about it.
That's the conditions attached to Blackwater.
No legal recourse.
Right? And that's been around since 2006 or something in the States, hey?
So they're putting it into our food regulatory information. I mean...
Wow.
Don't you hate it, Bryony, when people deny the setup of the New World Order, deny the coming police state, even as it gets set up right in front of them?
Right. Well, I mean, it was a few years ago. I mean, you probably remember the dates more so than I would, Benny, is all those farmers markets that were being attacked in certain states in the USA.
They had a large farmers market conference in Mount Shasta, California, that was invaded by food safety officers who said that this food was unsafe. They had all these beautiful potatoes and vegetables and everything like that. They were about to have this massive feast. And they came onto their land without a warrant, without permission, and forced them to pour solvents all over this food, declaring it was unsafe.
Wow. I've heard about that's insane.
Yeah. I mean, that's almost as bad as the gun-drawn milk raids. If people like selling raw milk in shops and things like that had business arrangements with local farmers, and they keep it fresh and everything stocked in every day. These guys waltz in. You can see the security footage of it if you search gun-drawn raids on milk, organic milk. You're selling milk? Here's a 9mm round to your head if you're not careful.
Wow.
Yeah, see, sometimes... the word's failure. You listen to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com is where you need to go. Check out our sponsors, of course, on the homepage, including the book by the wonderful guest, Bryony Holmes, The Range of Illusion, a Provinces novel. This is the first New Zealand show to be regular and have a listener base paying for everything and insuring the cost, so we don't need to take big corporate evil sponsors like the mainstream media do. This is real media and it needs real people like you to fund it. So go get those PayPal buttons or the KiwiBank account on the homepage of TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com and donate or start up a regular gift.
About the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there is a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country. Come take me home again. Now, I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder. Ride on the peace train.
Ooh. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest, Bryony Holmes, the author of The Range of Illusion, a Provinces novel, a story of secrecy, a saga of the self, and a citizen's search for truth. How long did it actually take you to finish the novel?
My first sentence was written on the 11th of November, 2011. Because Armistice it was a Day. Really, pardon?
Armistice Day.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, there you go.
It wow, was on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, the World War I armistice was declared and everybody laid down their arms and nobody killed each other anymore.
Wow, I didn't put those two together. I had a feeling. There was something about that day about it. Wow. Well, yeah, so on Armistice Day, I put down my first sentence and just didn't really stop from there. It was the research prior to that started well before. The editing process, it took me probably about 7 months to write the first draft. And then it took me until, when did I finish my last edit? March. And the editing process was really lengthy because I wrote it very organically. A lot of my characters made decisions with the information that I had in my head. Which was the fun part of it for sure. But the editing, afterwards was, intensive. I had to cut about 30,000 words out of it, but, yeah, it was close to a year and a half to write the first book.
Well, it seems like a, kind of like how people mold a clay pot or something like that. They just grab that big lump of clay, boom, throw it on there. And right? then just like, how do we shape this into something we can use?
Right? That's exactly it. That's a great comparison. Definitely. I mean, it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot through the editing process. It was at times difficult. I was helped with Saw Nying, who was a great editor. He really helped me understand certain aspects of my writing that I could improve and just common grammatical errors that I was making. So that was very helpful. So hopefully the sequel will be a little bit less editing intensive. But we will see. I can't speak ahead of time because it's the characters who do make the decisions. So as much as I want to plan it out, I mean, The Range of Illusion was initially supposed to be just about the seed banks and genetically modified organisms and kind of just sticking to those ideas and themes and the pharmaceutical companies a little bit. But it got the more I learned, the more I felt it was necessary to include additional information. And it got away with me in a good way, It was a great experience.
Well, you can't cut yourself short when you're trying to create a world in a fictional sense, you know. I mean, how much information is currently input? Let's say the current globe is a computer program like The Matrix. Way too much code to decode The Matrix, son.
Well, that's it. I mean, yeah. It creates itself. It was very much a lot of the times when I was writing, I'd read back on things and not actually remember writing it because it was really cathartic. And that's probably an aspect that was really helpful to the continuing to educate myself on certain topics and then being able to relay it in a sense that was incredibly therapeutic, almost meditative. Looking back on it, definitely. I mean, I know it very well now because I had to read it so many times during the edit. But the second or third read through, I'd be like, don't remember writing that. Fantastic.
Yeah. It does seem like that. If you're in a creative field and you're creating content, it is actually quite difficult to remember all the stuff that you've created, all the things that you've said, all the things that you've done. I mean, like, I can look back over 4 years of radio, uncounted, ridiculously awesome, excruciating interviews with really amazing people. And I'll come back and listen to them. And it was like, almost as if when I was interviewing them, I wasn't listening to them. I was only waiting for my turn to speak. And when I go back and I listen to the broadcast, you can't tell that I'm just waiting for my turn to speak per se. And the interview just sounds really, really nice. It's easy to listen to kind of thing. I recall this one time, you kind of have to sit back and have a look at your accomplishments when you think that you haven't accomplished anything. And then you're like, yeah. Whoa, I was pretty wrong there. what do I do now?
I think given the information that you discuss and similar to what I've written about as well, is you constantly need refresher courses on it too, because there's so much out there. There's so many different topics. It's all one big web of information with you know, highlights on certain topics, but it all branches out and it's all interconnected. And you dive into another topic and get, you know, quasi obsessed with it. And then you jump onto another topic and then you've got to come back to where you started and then go back through it all again, just to kind of build those blocks to a full understanding of the big picture. Cause there's so much out there and I do believe that it's all connected in some degree. Yeah.
Well, that's why it's so difficult to pontificate about it at short intervals, because of the range of connections to them. I mean, it's like it becomes very difficult to maintain a train of thought, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. I would agree with that 100%. I find myself going off on different tangents in my head, but trying to understand what I'm actually saying at the same time, because there is so much out there, and it is all relative to each other. And trying to stay on point is something that I'm trying to work on, especially with talking to people who aren't necessarily heavily invested in it yet or are interested. And going off topic, I don't want to be difficult to understand first time around for people who are relatively new. Practice.
Yeah. Well, see, if people are really, really new, they either want to know at that point or they don't. If they don't want to know, I don't want to try wasting my time, you know, telling them, you know. It's like, dude, you can either see me as a teacher right here, right now, because you and accept, like I have, that I don't really know what I'm talking about. You know, and that you don't either. And just listen and you might learn something new. I mean, have you got something more important to do today than learn something new that could change your entire direction of your life? You know, what's more important than that? I can't see I can't see anything.
Yeah, piquing curiosity, and you have to have curious people to do that.
It's that's a Chinese meal, isn't it? Piquing curiosity, right next to the Peking duck. It's served with cashew nuts, I think.
And crispy, I like cashew nuts.
And crispy noodles.
Crispy noodles. Oh, if they were gluten-free, that's another thing, you know?
Yeah. It's
gluten
in everywhere.
Intolerance.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's insane. The corruption of the ancient grains has not done well for ourselves.
What's this whole thing about ancient grains? Like, I've seen this on breads and what have you, but I was under the impression that you shouldn't eat whole grains anyway, because your body can't even process nothing from them. They pass right through.
Right. I don't think we're built to actually process them. I think there was I can't speak for myself personally, but I do know people who are still comfortable in being able to consume these ancient grains and whole grains and without any discomfort. I'm gluten intolerant. I haven't done any of the tests or anything, but I know how I feel when I consume certain things. And I know that when it initially started, spelt was all right, which is an ancient grain that hasn't been manipulated or changed in any way over the years. And I don't know how much I trust the terminology ancient grains on loaves anymore, just because of, you know, say, for example, with your rant with McDonald's, you know, with the beef patty, and it's only 10% beef. It's really hard to be 100% trusting of that product unless you've met the farmer themselves and gone, oh, okay, you know, and they're really passionate about what they're creating, really passionate about what they're feeding people using organic means to do so. But yeah, with the
maybe this is what the curiosity thing that you're talking about, finding out where things come from. But anyway, ancient grains, sorry.
Ancient grains. So, I mean, with regards to the digesting of it and us biologically not being able to do so, admittedly, I could educate myself further there. But I just know that there has been a vast increase in people who have become gluten intolerant, whether it's due to a trend or whether it's due to huge involvement in the flour industry and the systemic pesticides that are contained within the plant to apparently fight off those bugs, you know. It's interesting, but I know from my perspective, I cannot consume it anymore. It makes me incredibly sick.
I know what you're talking about. I have the same kind of reaction when I drink milk, you know, kind of like a lactose intolerance. I get this really bad phlegm. It's sick, man. I actually kind of like, if I drink too much of it, I actually really start throwing up quite horrendously and get massive mucus coming out of my nose and everything. I'm kind of highly allergic to it. It's like poison.
Right.
And that's even organic milk. The non-pasteurized, non-homogenized stuff, I can have like a tiny little amount of it, and but any more and I start to get sick. Like, you know, when you're making good scrambled eggs or something like that, you put a little bit of organic butter, a little bit of organic right. milk, and you mix the eggs up with it and you fry that. That's fine.
Okay.
But I can't like have milk in my coffee, for example.
Wow. Now, do you think that's because it is the actual milk itself, and once again, we're not supposed to be able to consume dairy? Or do you think that could be the organic title is something that's being used and abused at the moment? I mean, we know that there's antibiotics and all sorts going into our farming industry. Well, maybe not so much New Zealand. I've done a heavy focus on North America.
I care not.
And we import a lot from Australia too, who are in bed with the same guys to a certain degree.
At the end of the day, I care not. It's like you said, with haven't been diagnosed gluten sensitive, but I know what I feel.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. Hey, incidentally, do you know why cows can't wear flip flops?
Why?
Because they lactose.
Did you just make that up?
No, I made that joke up a while ago.
Okay.
It's so rare I get to use it in an opportunistic sense, you know, as relevant to the material. In fact, I'm coming up with there's a big jokes page on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, ladies and gentlemen, by the way. If you're curious enough, you can see it. It says humor on it, and a little bar drops down to jokes. There's some freaking cracker ones in there, man. Like, what was it? Why do Arabs throw their shoes at their enemies?
Why?
To show them what defeat looks like.
Oh. And you come up with all of these yourself? The play on words?
Oh, yeah. Like, what do you call a lake named after a capsizing canoe?
I don't know.
Waka Tipu. That's a New Zealand joke, by the way.
That was special.
Yeah. It's a New Zealand joke, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Lake Waka Tipu is actually a lake in New Zealand, and a waka is a Māori canoe, and tipu as in tip. It's much funnier if you don't have to explain the joke afterwards. What do you call an undead creature that steals things?
A pardon?
What do you call an undead creature that steals things?
What?
Rob Zombie.
Oh, I like that one.
Or is it, how do you know if the chef has fleas?
I don't know.
He'll make your meal from scratch.
Oh, okay. Sometimes I'm not very quick with these jokes, so I'm glad I've been a little more on form today. That one I had to think about. That was good, though. I love play words.
Yeah. One more, and then we'll okay. We'll go back into the show, shall we? You know, what do you call a Freemasonic photographer?
What?
Grandmaster Flash.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I had a listener contact me today who's saying that he's really depressed and he wants to go out killing people. What should he do?
Wow.
And I said, bro, do you have any weed? Do you have any booze? Do you have the internet? Look up Bill Hicks, Sane yes. Man. Okay,
Bill Hicks is brilliant.
His entire sketch called Sane Man. He did it like in the early 90s, I think, like that. If you get wasted, if you're feeling like hurting people, all right, just get freaking wasted and watch that. You will no longer feel like hurting people. In fact, you'll probably be more inclined to want to go out and help people and have some fun.
I will check that out. I'm a big fan of Bill.
Well, in fact, that's something I was thinking about earlier today. Interesting. Another tangent. Here we go. When I was in Dunedin, my flatmate introduced me to two things. Three things, actually. Cannabis, Bill Hicks, and conspiracy theories.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't think he realized how much of a massive influence he actually played on my life and who I am now, which is funny because we actually had a bit of a falling out. And he's no longer my friend. In fact, I don't have a lot of people from my past in my life anymore. Like, no friends from high school, university, or any of that stuff. They just kind of like they fall by the wayside, and you just go out and you make new friends in the areas that you're in. I'm really terrible at keeping in touch. Actually, have you had the same phenomenon moving around so much?
I used to be pretty bad about it. I've gotten a lot better. But that's a conscious effort that I have to make on a weekly basis and just go, ooh, you know, I need to send out a group email, you know, and then then if I get responses from that, I'll make a personal email back. So that's something I've consciously had to pay attention to. In the past before that, not so great. Yeah, definitely wasn't my forte.
Yeah. I mean, maybe when we're all younger and everything's a new adventure and what have you, we're like moving on to bigger and better and blah, 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 blah. And then we forget about consolidating your life and realizing the value of these people that you've met that are actually good people and that they can't really be replaced.
That's it. I mean, a friend of mine once said this to me. It's a great statement because I've carried it with me for years, about 7 years now, 7 years ago that she said it. And she said, you got friends for reasons, friends for a season, and friends for life. So, you know, you got the friends who introduce you to new ideas and trigger something within you, and you get on really, really well at the time, whatever may happen. And you got the friends for the season who you're both in the same moment, in the same position within that moment of your life, and you resonate with that. And then we all grow and change, you know. And then you got the friends for life who, you know, that speaks for itself. And it makes sense. You know, I think we all meet each other. I'm a little bit sort of in the belief that every person I meet, I've got something to learn from them. And I'm always trying to find out what that is. So I question a lot. I ask a hell of a lot of questions. But there's so many people with different ideas and different values. And I mean, if you're friends for life, I mean, that's a massive gift. It really is.
I found sometimes you don't even need to keep in contact with friends for life. You could see each other years in a stretch, and then you just kind of pick up where you left on, you know.
That's it.
And catch
That's
up.
That's it, exactly. I agree.
What's really interesting is sometimes those old friends that you thought you got on like that are they kind of hold a pin on you, and they're like, why didn't you call me, or any of that kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, mate, you. I'm sorry, but. You know, life's life, bro. I didn't mean anything by it. I'm sorry.
Right. That's exactly it. Because, I mean, we're busy individuals. We've got our passions. We've got our focuses. And it's easy to kind of get caught up, and the week goes by and you're like, huh, it's Friday again, or it's Sunday again, you know? It happens very quickly.
Yeah. Life just kind of falls through your fingers, you know, like sands through the hourglass, as it were.
Mm.
You wonder where the hell it all went.
Right.
You know, I'm just kind of thinking about how awesome it's going to be when I'm old, if I don't get exterminated, of course. It'll be quite nice, you know, just to be able to. Most of my friends are roughly twice my age, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a whole lot of people call me wise and what have you. I'm not really. I haven't actually earned any of my knowledge or any of my wisdom. Most of it I haven't earned. I've just been given it by these my elders who are wiser and more experienced than I. It doesn't make me an adept, more or less. I haven't seen what they've seen. I've only heard what they've told me. You know, there's everybody should be wise to remember the difference.
Mm.
And it occurs to me that there's this inherent value in people and people's individual stories, their individual takes on things. And I think there's 7 billion stories, you know?
That's it, right?
And I just wonder why we spend so much time looking at stories that don't have any relevance to anything, you know? Like, if somebody's talking about as they say in that movie Network, you know, today some local newscaster said we had 53 homicides and 16 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be.
Right.
I think if you're going to be listening to a story or watching a story, it at best freaking means something to you. You know, you've got to actually be able to resonate with the characters. You have to be able to put yourself in their shoes. Either that or give you insight onto how they feel. Much deeper insight to the human condition than you had previously thought about. Those are the kind of stories that actually stay with you. They impact you. Like Samwise Gamgee in the end of the second Lord of the Rings film, talking about how people had lots of chances of giving up and going home, only they didn't, because they were holding on to something. That there's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for.
That's a beautiful thought. And it's true. It is true. And that kind of, you know, resonates back to what we've been discussing with, you know, bringing that positivity into people's lives and showing a genuine interest in the people you're discussing things with, you know, like the art of saying, how are you? You know, it, you know, it's for a lot of people, it's fallen by the wayside. It's just, it's a cordiality. It's not really a genuine, how are you? I want to know about you. I want to know how your day was. You know, I mean, one of the most beautiful things I learned from this wonderful Korean lady, going back to the war when there wasn't much food, and she was teaching me, she gave me a crash course in Korean culture. And she said to me, in Korea, we don't say, how are you? We say, have you eaten today? Because they were looking after their community, making sure that people were fed and people shared what little they had to look after each other. And I just thought that was absolutely beautiful because there's a genuine interest in the person you're conversing with, in their well-being as a person. And I think all of us can always do better at that. I mean, every person can. Genuine interest in each other. We all have our backgrounds. We all came from somewhere.
Well, and I think it's kind of like those X-Men origin stories, I like to call them, of the activists and authors and basically people who aren't just working 40 hours a week in a slave job and not really doing anything with their life. I mean, it's not your fault if that's the current situation that you're in, per se. Society was structured in a way to make sure that people would think that that was a good idea and to convince you that doing otherwise was foolish and risky.
Mm.
It's the opposite. Living for somebody else on an every day-to-day basis and totally being dependent on a source of income from somebody who doesn't actually have any real attachment to you, per se, and could just fire you tomorrow, is risky.
Mm, agreed.
Just as risky as going into it for yourself. They just tell you that going into yourself is more risky because they risk losing your productivity when you become independent and no longer dependent on them. They lose their power over you. And so that's why they convince you that it's a bad idea, bro. You know, what's your backup?
Well, yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. It's designed in such a way to keep you chained up.
Yeah. I mean, what's my backup? Does Earth, planet Earth, have a backup? There ain't no freaking backup plan, ladies and gentlemen. You can make it up as you go along. I mean, take one from the politicians. They know what they're doing. I mean, you know, that's why politicians are so powerful. It's because they're literally able to make up things as they go along. They're able to change laws and totally just tell you the exact opposite thing of what they told you yesterday and totally get away with it. Life is actually like that, except using those methodologies doesn't always result in evil or accumulation of power to yourself. Sometimes it results in really profound realizations. Okay? Life-changing events, etc., through the course of your everyday BS. Just pay attention once in a while and give a random person a smile. Bryony Holmes is my very special guest. Thank you very much for spending this extended interview with me here today. The Range of Illusion, a Provinces novel by B. Holmes. On the homepage there, A Story of Secrecy, A Saga of the Self and a Citizen's Search for Truth. So, Bryony, thank you very much. Any final words?
I really enjoyed talking with you today. I really did. Thank you for your time.
And do you have websites to plug or something of that nature?
I do. It's quite lengthy, though. It's growing into a blog. It's www.banteringbpublishing.com. I can hyperlink it maybe to my book or something, because it is quite a lengthy website to kind of, yeah.
Does it say banteringpublishing.com?
Bantering B Publishing. So it's bantering, B-A-N-T-E-R-I-N-G, B-B-E-E, and then publishing.com.
Ah, like a bee that's bantering around and publishing little books.
That's the one.
For all those other little queens out there. Well, there's little queens out there that are just too busy. Okay. Thank you, Bryony. And you have yourself a lovely evening.
You as well.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Bear in mind, again, a reminder, listener-supported broadcast here, almost in the main and in the entirety. So please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and donate or sign up for a regular gifting today. We'll see you again sometime.